From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Well, we'll have those open lines next hour with a regret hotline. There's some of the news of the day. The Food and Drug Administration will look into claims from an advocacy group that certain lipsticks contain potentially dangerous levels of lead. Similar claims in the past have not been confirmed. The Campaign for Safe Cosmetics said that a third of the 33 red lipsticks examined by an independent lab contained a level of lead exceeding 0.1 parts per million, which is the FDA's limit for lead in candy. The FDA does not set a limit for lead in lipstick. The Vatican has published secret documents about the trial of the Knights Templar, including a parchment long ignored because of a vague catalog entry in 1628 showing that Pope Clement V initially absolved the medieval order of heresy. The 300-page volume recently came out in a limited edition, 799 copies, each priced at $8,377. The Order of Knights, which ultimately disappeared because of the heresy scandal, recently captivated the imagination of the readers of the bestseller The Da Vinci Code, which linked the Templars to the story of the Holy Grail. The Vatican work reproduces the entire documentation of the papal hearings convened after King Philip IV of France arrested and tortured Templar leaders in 1307 on charges of heresy and immortality. Of course, all those arrests occurred on, right, a Friday the 13th. As their military might increase, the Templars also grew in wealth, acquiring property throughout Europe and running a primitive banking system. And they left the Middle East with the collapse of the Crusader kingdoms. Their power and secretive ways aroused the fear of European rulers and sparked accusations of corruption and blasphemy. Historians believe that Philip owed debts to the Templars and used the accusations to arrest their leaders and extract, under torture, confessions of heresy as a way to seize the order's riches. The commissioner of Atlanta's Department of Watershed Management has made an urgent plea for conservation because of the severe drought that has forced restrictions on 61 counties in northern Georgia. Robert Hunter called the drought of historic magnitude, and he said everyone must come together to protect and conserve limited water resources there. The storage for Atlanta's water supply is Lake Lanier, located north of the city. Hunter said it provides water for one-third of the residents of Georgia. He said that now there's enough water in Lanier to serve the area for 121 days. Man, that's getting close. NASA is studying a possible problem with the thermal shielding on Discovery's wings that could force a delay in this month's launch. Discovery's seven astronauts climbed aboard the shuttle at the launch pad for a practice countdown. At the same time, the shuttle managers discussed whether three of the 44 reinforced carbon panels that line the edges of Discovery's wings should be replaced. The shuttle would have to be returned to the hangar for that kind of work, which would mean a launch delay. Discovery is scheduled to lift off October 23rd in a new live-in compartment for the International Space Station. They're going to bring that up there. A Pentagon chartered report urges the United States to take the lead in developing space platforms capable of capturing sunlight and beaming electrical power down to Earth. Space-based solar power, according to the report, has the potential to help the United States stave off climate change and avoid future conflicts over oil by harnessing the sun's power to provide an essentially inexhaustible supply of clean energy. This is worth a full story, so I shall keep that one and put it on the old shelf. The switch has been thrown on a telescope specifically designed to seek out alien life, funded by Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen. The finished array, 350 6-meter antennas, one of the world's largest, the Allen Telescope Array will be able to sweep more than 1 million star systems for radio signals generated maybe by intelligent beings. Its creators hope it will help spot definitive signs of alien life by 2025. On the line with us now, our dear friend Seth Shostak from SETI. Seth, this has got to be exciting news for all of you, huh?
It is indeed, George. In fact, Paul Allen himself helicoptered into the Allen Telescope Array yesterday. here in northeastern California and pushed the big button that got the antennas moving.
You know, we have been talking with you, Seth, about this for years. It's now a reality. Tell us how everything will work.
Well, the idea here is that because electronics in the last 20 years have dropped in price, in particular the kind of electronics you need to build a very sensitive radio telescope, kind of electronics that can amplify very faint signals, that means that now the way to build a radio telescope, instead of building, you know, one giant antenna like that thing down in Puerto Rico, for example, you build lots and lots of small ones. It has tremendous advantages, and not the least of those advantages, by the way, is very low cost. Well, we have 42 of the eventual 350 antennas in play, so not all 350. That takes more money, but we have 42 of them, and 42 is enough to actually start the science. So that's what we were doing yesterday, cutting the ribbon, pushing the button, starting to collect the data.
How do you determine, how does SETI determine where to aim these telescopes? What systems, perhaps, might be out there to beam
in
on?
Well, there are lots of schemes you could think of, and we've thought of several, and we hope that other people will suggest things as well. But the most dead obvious approach, of course, is just to start looking at the nearest stars to us and slowly move farther out if you don't find any signal, sort of work your way out of our own backyard and into the next yard and then down the block and that sort of thing. That's one approach. Another thing we'll be doing with the Allen Telescope Array in its current configuration with these 42 antennas is looking at 20 square degrees of the center of our galaxy. And the center of our galaxy is kind of far away. It's, you know, like 25,000 light years away. That's pretty far, but it's just clogged with stars. There are literally billions of stars that we'll be checking out all at once by doing that. So that's a good project for the array as it is now.
Seth, when we get stories from, like, the Betty and Barney Hill abduction case, and she claims that these aliens were from the star system Zeta Reticuli in that area, will you beam in that area just for the heck of it?
Well, sure. You know, we've been asked that before, and I've checked out Zeta Reticuli. I don't think it's a particularly good star system in terms of having planets, but it's not impossible. And but it's relatively close. It's within 100 or 200 light years. I don't remember the distance. It's pretty darn close, though. And that means it's automatically on our list. So, of course, it, too, will be looked at, as will, by the way, the 200 and some odd star systems that we already know have planets. All of those are nearby, or virtually all of them, and we will indeed check them out. They all make the cut.
Do me a favor, too. There's a star system. What is it? Epsilon Bootes? Something, is that how it's pronounced?
Epsilon Bootes, yes.
It's Bootes. I say Bootes, you say Bootes. Aim that way. I have a feeling there's something out there. I don't know why, Seth, but I do.
All right, George, if we get a hit on Epsilon Bootes, I'll buy you a dinner.
You got it. Thanks, Seth.
Okay, you're welcome.
SETI Institute, they're up there with the Paul Allen Array of Telescopes. Let's hope one day Seth is on the program again and he says, you know what, we are hearing intelligent signals from outer space. Wouldn't that be something? A British scientist has been awarded a doctorate for a paper predicting that humans will one day marry robots. David Levy, a PhD for a thesis entitled Intimate Relationships with Artificial Partners, well, he wrote that trends in robotics and shifting attitudes on marriage are likely to result in sophisticated robots that will eventually be seen as suitable marriage partners. Man, technology is really going faster than I thought. Well, the scary states of America, they're out there. Michael Teitelbaum is our guest next on Coast to Coast AM. I'm telling you, this is one of those nights where you just want to be glued to the radio and just enjoy the things you're going to hear. Listen to this one, The Scary States of America. Michael Teitelbaum has been a writer and editor of children's books, comic books, and magazines for more than 20 years. He has written more than 200 books for young readers. His fiction work includes novels based on Avatar, Spider-Man, Batman, Smallville, and Justice League. His nonfiction work includes books on baseball and the history of radio and television. Michael's latest book is The Scary States of America, a collection of the 50 stories of the paranormal, one from each state. We won't have time to go through everyone, but we'll have fun with some. Michael has always been interested in the paranormal, despite a rather normal childhood growing up in Brooklyn, New York. Michael Teitelbaum. Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hi, George. Pleasure to be with you.
Great work. How did you get into this?
Well, I've always kind of been interested in the paranormal as a kid. one of the things I think that kind of got me hooked was the Twilight Zone TV show, one of my all-time favorites, and I absolutely loved it as a kid. I loved the stories, and I think it helped open me up to the world beyond that, which we take for granted. I loved how the show kind of blended the normal, mundane world with the extraordinary things just kind of beyond our vision. And I always kind of felt like there was stuff out there, and I kept my eyes open to it. And being a writer for kids, I know that there are a lot of kids who experience these things as well, and I thought it would be interesting to kind of do some research, find out what's out there, and collect the stories, because it is a national, of course, international, too, phenomenon. And so the idea for the Scary States of America came about, one story from each state.
Well, you're going to share some of those, and some of them are scary enough to knock one's socks off, to tell you the truth, Michael. We have been fans of the Twilight Zone since it's been on television, even in the rerun stage. I don't know if you know Mark Zakri or not. He's an expert on the Twilight Zone. He comes forward and talks with things. But, you know, a lot of the things that we've talked about in this program, you talk in the book about the Skunk Ape of Florida, Shadow People, Jersey Devil, extraterrestrials. I mean, this is like coast to coast in a book form. I love it.
Yeah, it's there are the classic paranormal phenomenon, whether it has to do with hauntings, whether it has to do with extraterrestrials or certain creatures that have kind of come from folklore legend. And I'm also interested in that, where a folklore, a local legend, and a genuine paranormal experience. You know, is there a difference among those things? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe folklore is just someone's paranormal experience a long time ago. That story has been passed down to the point where it's become something of a legend or a folklore. Doesn't make it any less of a valid experience. And I kind of put all those famous skunk ape, Bigfoot, and the like in that category, Jersey Devil. They've sort of passed into the realm of mythology at this point, but I think they started with something that might be as common as any one of your listeners experience with any of these phenomena.
Though you picked one from every state.
Yes.
Are there some states in your research that may be more paranormally inclined, if I can say that, than others?
I found a few things in the research. Washington State seems to attract a great number of UFOs. I don't have the exact numbers, but I believe there are statistics that there have been more sightings in that state than in any other. In my interaction with readers, I've discovered there's a lot going on in California. Many events of all kinds tend to happen there. And then there are certain regions, Pacific Northwest again, where there have been more Bigfoot Sasquatch sightings based on the environment. So, yeah, there are certain states, but one of the themes that I like to look at is it doesn't really matter where you live. You live in any of the scary states. These things are common, and they're consistent, and they happen to everybody.
Tell me about the Shadow People of Arkansas, Michael.
Ah, the Shadow People of Arkansas. Well, there's a boy, about 11 or 12, who was babysitting for his little brother. And it was his first time babysitting. He was alone in the house. He was in his room, and he caught a flash of something moving out of the corner of his eye. And I think that's something that we've all experienced, and most of us kind of shrug it off. But I think kids are open to the paranormal, and they have fewer filters and learned defense mechanisms, and so they accept it more. And he watched as this vague shadow changed into a human shape, kind of a swirling black mist, took human form,
Yeah. And
it rushed past him downstairs. The boy chased after it, and the first thing he noticed was the pets in his house seemed to sense something. His parakeet began squawking, and his cat started hissing and puffed up and got a big tail. And when he finally came face to face with the creature, he was frozen. He felt that he was unable to move. Then the shadow creature released him and headed back upstairs, and the boy grew very concerned for his three-year-old brother, who was asleep. So he chased the thing at the top of the stairs, and again, it turned and locked him in a frozen stare. He was unable to move. And finally, the cat dashed upstairs, ran past the creature. The creature got frightened, dashed down the hall and out the window. And later that night, when the boy's mom came home, she noticed two small handprints on the hallway window that she had cleaned earlier that day.
That's eerie. See, those are chilling.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I was looking for as I did my research, as I gathered them.
Did you stumble across the story in San Antonio, Texas? There was a I guess there was a bus accident there, and it was on a railroad tracks.
Yeah.
And cars are pushed out of the way when they stop on the tracks. And in some areas, the tracks may be gone now. I know they are in Belleville, Illinois.
Right.
Same kind of thing happened with a little boy who they say, the rumor says, he was tied to the tracks by some horrible people and run over by a train.
Oh, geez.
Those tracks are now gone, Michael. But people who stop in the vicinity where the tracks used to be, their car is pushed away. If you put powder on the bumper of your car, you'll get those little handprints, they say.
Absolutely. I did find that story in Texas. This terrible, unfortunate bus accident, which many school children were killed. And the interesting thing about that is it said that if the incline tends to go away from where the railroad tracks would be. So if you put your car in neutral, logic and gravity would tell you that your car would roll backwards. But people have experienced the opposite, that your car actually moves toward the tracks, past the tracks, as if these poor children who could not save themselves are there to save others. And the same phenomenon of these tiny handprints appearing on the back of the car as if they collectively pushed the car out of the way. So yes, that was a phenomenal story from Texas.
Do you think children are more predisposed to these unusual experiences?
I do. I think they are. I think they're more accepting. I think they're more open to paranormal experiences than some adults. I think they're ready to believe that what they are experiencing, if it's unusual, unexplainable, is truly paranormal. As I mentioned, I think adults have a lot of learned defense mechanisms. They work very hard to find alternative explanations for what their experience might have been. And it's harder for adults, with all the baggage, with all the training, with all the filters, to accept that an experience might have been paranormal. But I don't think kids work that hard searching for those explanations. I think it's important for kids to know that. One of my goals was to open kids up to this world and to let them know it's okay to feel and experience these things. There is that world out there beyond the one we take for granted, and they need to know that so that they don't feel like they're strange or there's something wrong with them if they do have a paranormal experience.
Michael, where does one find the Scary States of America book?
It's currently in all bookstores. It's in the major chains like Barnes & Noble. It's at your local independent. Of course, it's on Amazon.com. Anywhere that children's books are sold, and, of course, online on Amazon. It's available.
Fantastic.
Right now.
I've got the paperback in my hand. It's only $7.99.
Yep. We tried to...
In the U.S., yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We tried to pack a lot of value into the book. It's, as you see, kind of a hefty tome, and there's a lot of stories in there. We wanted to price it so it was accessible to just about everyone. I've also found adults that have read the book have really enjoyed it. It's not a little kiddie book, as I think from some of these stories we'll let your listeners know. It's not a cute, funny monster story. Those are terrific for young kids. This is for an older audience, and a number of the adults who've read the book have told me that it creeped them out, and it was a good read, and just wanted to get it into as many hands as possible. And you know, it's one of the reasons for the reasonable price.
Well, I've got about 50 pages to go, and I'm gonna read it on the plane back to Los Angeles in a couple weeks.
That's terrific.
And you know what I like too about it is the way you have in the table of contents each state. You know, all the way down, and you know, with the page. So if you want to go to Oklahoma, it's on page 282. If you want to go to Utah, it's on page 344. And each one has one of these stories. How did you decide on what? Well, we're coming up to a break. I'll ask you that when we come back. And I'll tell you what also, Michael, let's open up the phone lines and have people call from their respective states with perhaps some kind of scary story for you, okay?
That sounds great.
We'll do that. Our guest is Michael Teitelbaum. I'm George Norrie. We're talking about his latest work, The Scary States of America. Let's do that. Call from your state. What's your scary story? We'll be right back. Coast to Coast AM, one of the few nationally syndicated programs that goes live 7 nights a week for you. On Saturday, Ian Punnett, he comes in. We're going to talk about survival in the backwoods with a little coast-to-coast twist. Then on Sunday, Raleigh James joins us with our past guest friend, Dr. Keith Scott Mumby. He's going to talk about how your body chooses the food that's just right for you. Keith is just an amazing interview. So a full array of programs for you this weekend on Coast to Coast AM, and then I'll be back with you on Monday. But we'll be right back with Michael Teitelbaum, your phone calls, your stories about scary things in your state, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Open lines begin next hour, but this hour we've got Michael Teitelbaum. We're talking about his work, The Scary States of America. And, of course, we'll take your phone calls. What do you think of Bigfoot stories, Michael?
Well, it's interesting. I've read a bit about some of the scientific work behind Bigfoot. I've read some of the work of Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum, who's a professor of anatomy of primatology at Idaho State University, John Bindernagel, and then some of the classic work, John Green, Grover Kranz. I kind of go with the general scientific theory of Bigfoot, Sasquatch being the Gigantopithecus creature, simply a large primate whose existence is still unproven. It makes a lot of sense to me. Just as there was a time up until the early 20th century when the mountain gorilla was unknown. That was a so-called mythical creature, and then scientists found evidence, proof that it existed. I think there's a strong possibility that this will occur with the Sasquatch creature. It's simply a large primate we haven't found yet, although, of course, there's lots of evidence, footprints, plaster casts, and the like, hair, nests, vocalizations, to support the evidence of his existence. So I've had an interest in the scientific research along those lines.
Let's go to the phones. We'll continue our chat. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from St. Louis, Missouri, sir.
You are not too far from where I may be. Go ahead.
You could possibly be right down the road at Westport. It's very possible. I'm not sure, but my name's Mark, and I'm an up-and-coming radio DJ here in the St. Louis area. You know,
good for you,
I'm
man.
On a college radio station here at Forest Valley Community College. And the other night, on Wednesday night, we do a show once a week called Prime Time with Mark and Tony. It's just this little thing we have. And during the 10 o'clock hour, the last hour of our show, and I've actually already sent the audio off to you in an email, as well as Art Bell and also the lady who's taking the phone calls tonight, we actually had what I believe, and no one else, the station general manager and everyone else, cannot figure out for the life of them what it is. Someone says hello. And it was broadcast out live over the air, and it was whispered in. It wasn't something, and I'm in my own protected soundproof booth, and he's in his own protected soundproof booth so that we all have enough room, and I'm using the control boards and everything, and it's nothing. And he didn't hear it in his headphones at all, and it's on the mic skim. We've actually got it, and it broadcast live, and the audio clip shows, you know, you can hear something in the background a little bit, and as soon as you hear the sound and then you hear me ask him, did you just say something? Did you hear that? It's dead silent. You don't hear him breathing or anything like that. And he just goes, what are you talking about?
And yeah, we definitely want to hear that stuff, Mark.
Oh, I'm serious. It's easier to hear it with headphones on, obviously. But I would really love to get this into the hands of some serious paranormal investigators and people who do EVP and stuff like that so that they could denounce it, you know, like seriously break it apart, you know, prove to me that it's not what I think it is, because it really scared me really bad.
Okay, do that. Make sure you get it to us if you would, and we'll get it in the hands of a couple of people who do these kinds of investigations. Did you come across any stories of EVPs, the electronic voice phenomena?
I did. There were... They are fairly common. It's a very technical thing. It happens in lots of different houses where people claim hauntings have gone on. It is another phenomenon that crosses all states. And again, as the gentleman who called said, the point is take a look at it, analyze it. Let's find out if there is, as with all paranormal phenomenon, is there a rational explanation? And if there isn't, well, then what are we dealing with? So it sounds like that gentleman has come across something interesting out there in Missouri.
Wildcard Lion, it's your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, I can't believe I actually got through.
You did. It's all you.
I've been trying for years. Now, we're talking about scary stories here, and I know one house that we lived in when I was a teenager. We happened to have some roommates along with us, and at one point, everybody in the night got up roughly around the same time, and I know for me, I had a nightmare about a black creature, and it was about the scariest nightmare I think I've ever had in my life, and it was just exactly like one of the previous callers said. It froze me. You know, it was something that had cat eyes. It was horrifying. And I came down, and my mom was putting some wood in the stove, in the fire, and my sister came down shortly thereafter, and we started talking, and Darlene and her kids came, and they started talking, and well, we had all had a very similar dream about this creature. And we were all a little bit freaked out, you know?
Sure.
So we were Christians, and we were praying, and my brother came down shortly after that, and he had the whitest face. He, according to him, he had got up, and he went to the bathroom, and he went back into his room, and when he laid down, the same thing that we saw in our dream, which was something shaped like a cat, only it was like the size of a dog, you know, had hissed at him, and he ran so fast, and he's not the one to make up things.
Well, the shadow people is a very common phenomenon all across the states, and your story sounds amazingly similar to many that I'd come across.
It was like something like a cat or a dog, but whatever it was profoundly evil. I was so scared.
And it seems to have these common characteristics. It moves quickly.
Yep.
It changes its form. If it locks you in its gaze, you're frozen. You're difficult moving. And usually I have heard people get a feeling of evil intent. So your experience sounds certainly common to people who've dealt with this creature.
Yeah, it's just the fact that we all dreamt about roughly the same thing.
Well, that's interesting.
Around the same
time. Interesting in and of itself, absolutely.
Michael Jersey.
I'm sorry, just the caller. What's your
story? She is just hung up after she did that, so I've
Alrighty.
Lost her. And Jersey Devil, what do you think?
Jersey Devil is an interesting story. The legend, the folklore, again, going back to is it a unique paranormal experience or not, it was supposed to have been a witch hundreds of years ago gave birth to this somewhat inhuman horned creature that has since gone around terrorizing residents of the state, and there's all kinds of theories. It's interesting as a story, as a legend evolves, is it an extraterrestrial? Is it a devil? Is it a mutant human? And no one knows for sure, but it's one of those classics that continues and gets passed down, and at this point in time feels like legend or mythology, but most likely was based on a genuine paranormal event that took place years ago and then just kind of passed into the mists of legend.
Okay, let's go to our next line. East of the Rockies, where are you calling from?
My name is Jared. I'm calling from Texas.
Okay, Jared.
I have a possible explanation for the train tracks in San Antonio. I think one of the news stations, one of the local news stations down there, did a little experiment as far as to maybe not necessarily disprove, but to point out that there might be a genuine logical explanation for it. And the logical explanation was that the way the road is tilted and then the way the land lays, it gives an optical illusion that the road is actually going back, but in fact, it actually has more of an incline towards the other direction. And to explain the handprints on the car,
right?
That would be because what do you do when you close your trunk? You put your hands on your car, and you have oils on your hands.
So you have prints, right?
So
what do you think? What do you think, Michael?
Interesting. It certainly is a possibility. I mean, I think that's the great thing with paranormal experiences and stories is it's open to interpretation. You have to keep an open mind. You have to respect those who've had these experiences because they have experienced something genuine. But you also have to respect the science behind it. And if something can physically be proven to be a phenomenon of fingerprints or gravity, that has to be respected too. So it's one of those situations, as with the EVPs, where these things should always be taken looked at rationally, but with an open mind.
I love skepticism because once you go through it and you can't prove it, the paranormal kicks in. Exactly.
Yep.
First time caller line, you're on the air with us. And what state are you in?
Hi, it's Stacy. I'm in Tennessee.
Hi, Stacy. Go ahead.
Hi. You once again talking about the cars being pushed by little children. I hear this story from different states. I've seen it on the Travel Channel under Weird Travels. And there's a place in Crossville, probably about a two-hour drive from where I'm at, that it's mile marker 10, Highway 68. The locals are probably going to get upset with me. I'll probably send a bunch of people over there. But if you stop, you're literally in the lull of two hills. And this last caller is talking about an optical illusion. And I promise you, I am a skeptical believer. And there's no optical illusion. If you put a marble on that road, it will roll pretty fast right back down the hill, like gravity would insist. But we would stop in the lull of these two hills right on mile marker 10, put the car in neutral, stop. We take our feet way back off the pedals to show everybody else in the car that we weren't, you know, messing with each other. And the car would begin to slowly move. I guess it would be eastward. It would slowly move eastward up this hill and gain speed, not just keep a steady speed like maybe it was an engine thing. I mean, we're all females. We don't know much about cars.
Oh, yeah? I know some females who know cars better than guys, believe it or not.
Well, that's true. That was stereotypical of me. But we didn't know anything about cars. So, I mean, but it would pick up speed, and we watched the speedometer, and at one point we even got 17 miles an hour up the hill. Nothing, no gas, nothing. And when we get to the top of the hill, you would think that you'd roll down the other side, the car would stop. And the legend behind it says that there was three kids waiting on the school bus right there, and a semi hit them and killed them, and that if you stop the car there, they push you out of the way, out of the blind spot, is what how the story goes. But I'm skeptical about the story because I hear this story from so many different places. You know, it's always a school bus, and it's always train tracks, or some truck comes and hits them. But the powder idea, I never personally did the powder, but one of my friends that used it, she used the powder and said there were tiny hands, not just handprints.
Not big handprints, exactly. And that's what I hear quite a bit, Michael.
Absolutely. Well, that's been one of the consistent factors. This also brings up a very interesting phenomenon about how certain paranormal experiences are common to a number of places.
All over the place, that's right.
All over the place, throughout the scary states, and even around the world. And they just seem to be these types of events, the defying of gravity, as the caller was talking about. I found stories with women and children in bridges. There's another, Indiana, New Hampshire. There are stories where these things are common. And again, we're talking about, well, is it simply a story? Is it simply a legend? It may be, but I choose to believe that these are genuine phenomena that do occur in more than one place. And then as time goes on and as the stories spread, they sort of move into that realm. So it's interesting to hear the caller talk about this particular thing in her state.
Tell me about the girl in Illinois who can start fires with her mind.
Well, that was very interesting, and this is a phenomenon that has occurred many times. In this particular case, there was a girl who unfortunately lost her mother, and she was, needless to say, very upset, very sad, and very angry. she ended up moving to her uncle's farm with her father, just to kind of, as they recovered and tried to get their feet back on the ground. And she woke up in the middle of a dream about her mother, and the curtains in the room were on fire, and they fortunately were able to get the fire put out in time. But she continued to have this recurring dream about her mother, and each time the fires got more intense, until finally, unfortunately, the farmhouse burned down. Everybody did get out, so fortunately there was no loss of life, but she was unaffected by the flames. She was able to pass through the flames and leave the house. And unfortunately, this girl ended up in a hospital, and as far as I know, it is still there, because undergoing the psychological aspect, tying in the grief for her mother, had triggered this phenomenon in her brain, which manifested itself in this physical reality of being able to start fires. It really is a quite terrifying situation.
Let's go to our next wild card line. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hey, George. This is Fred from Portview, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Fred. Thank you.
Just outside of Pittsburgh. And I have a story that was very shocking to me, and also kind of like a revelation. There's a place in Brownsville, Pennsylvania, that is called either one of three names: the Bauman Castle, the Neiman Colin Castle, or the Brownsville Castle. This place has originated from the 1750s, and right now it has over 26 rooms. Well, I used to belong to this paranormal club, and we went down there to investigate after hours one night. And this is the first time I actually saw, without the aid of optics, a physical manifestation of a ball of energy. And we were going to the master bedroom. I was arm in arm with the best psychic I've ever met. And this ball passed right through us. Now, I don't know if you've ever had an experience of touching a Van de Graaff generator, and you get that shock where your hair goes flying out like Albert Einstein and that kind of stuff.
Right.
But it was an electromagnetic shock and passed straight through us. And I have got many, many still pictures of ghost orbs in that place, and they're corroborated by videotape of the orbs moving up the stairs, across the landing, and then further up the stairs. This place is one of the most haunted places I've ever visited, and I think it deserves more investigation. I know Ohio University Paranormal Group out of their psychology department investigated and come up the same names that we did. I heard EVP. I heard an EVP from a little girl named Mary Ellen. Her mother was Mary Elizabeth, who passed through us in that shocking experience. But Mary Ellen was a little girl, and we had the speaker in the master bedroom, and it collected an EVP where it said, "Please, Papa, no. Please, Papa, no."
Yes.
None of this.
Those are eerie.
Oh, yeah, totally eerie. And I'll tell you what, it wasn't any of this type of stuff we had to listen to five different recordings of it to say, well, maybe it's saying this. This was totally clear and accurate.
That's unusual, but amazing.
Those are great stories. Michael, we're out of time. Would you give us your website, please?
Yes, it's scarystatesofamerica.com. It's an opportunity for people to share their stories. I have been getting many stories from people all over the country, many of which I've posted on the website. People can go there, read additional stories, and feel free to send in their own experiences.
Very good. Scarystatesofamerica.com. com. Thank you, Michael. Great work. Those of you on hold who didn't get your stories in, don't worry about it. I'm going to keep you for open lines, and we'll also open up the regret hotline. I'll talk about that in a moment. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.